Welcome to the Central Assembly Podcast. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
Good evening, Central Assembly. It's so good to be with you tonight. How are you guys? Doing good. Well, it is such a pleasure. It's a privilege to be here with you tonight to just share my story. I want to thank Pastor Anthony and Pastor Carter and everyone else who played a part in inviting me to come and share with you. So I want to kind of introduce myself, tell you a little bit about me, just so you have context for my story that I'm going to share. So my name is Hudson Spear, and I grew up as a missionary kid in Mexico City. We were there for about 8 years, and we moved back here in about 2010. So I was here for high school, and then after high school, attended Evangel University. And so after graduating from Evangel University, I really was wanting to find a home church. I was praying for that. And kind of towards the end of summer, into the fall, I began attending a small group. And it was a small group from Central. It was, if you guys know Chris and Charisse Grow, it was their small group. And I just felt so welcomed by them and connected with the people that were attending that small group. And that was such a blessing for me. They invited me to actually attend Central, and I had been to Central before, but I just began to come to Central Assembly, and honestly, meeting everyone here and meeting leadership and has been such a blessing, and it's a privilege to call it my home church. I've just been really blessed by this church. So, like I said, I attended Evangel University, and going in my freshman year, I was a pre-engineering major. And so I thought I wanted to be an engineer. I was so passionate about building things growing up, and always loved to tinker with stuff. And so my freshman year, I was taking all those the prerequisite classes, right, those gen eds. And the one thing I think that kind of motivated me to really ask myself, am I meant to be an engineer, was calculus 1, 2, and 3. Right? So those were the things that were coming up in my college career, and those made me ask myself, you know, am I cut out for this? Is this something I really want to do? And so I've always loved applied math, but I did ask those questions. But during really my first year at Evangel, the Lord began to work in my heart. And going into that year, I had, you know, I have known since I was around 10 years old that I was to do ministry. The Lord called me at the age of 10 to be a minister. Never knew what that was going to look like at all. And so the Lord kind of started unpacking things in my heart and really unveiling the fact that I was running from a call in my life to be a minister. And so I began to ask him questions. I began to ask him, Lord, what is your will for my life? What do you have in store for me? And he began to reveal those things slowly, slowly. And the first kind of things that he began to do was work through the pain in my heart and all those things that I had put between me and him growing up as a missionary kid. You know, I had just general insecurity and identity issues, and he began to unpack those things for me. And so as I began to dig through the baggage in my heart, he began to burden my heart for the lost in the world. And he began to show me grace, love, and mercy that beforehand I really had distanced myself from. He began to show me such an intimate love. An intimate love that is indescribable. It's the love of Jesus Christ. He began to show me that. And I began to tell him, Lord, the love that you're showing me, I don't want to just experience this for myself. I love you so much. I'm so thankful for the love that you've given me. You loved me, and you've predestined your plans for me before I ever even had an open ear to hear you. And I said, I want to share that with people that haven't heard. I want to share that love with them. I want to tell them about you. And he said, son, that is what you're supposed to do. That is what you're called to do. And that was a process of the Lord unveiling those things to me. That was a process of him kind of slowly and lovingly kind of inching me forward, giving me little bit by bit of what he was calling me to do. And so after that, after the following months, he began to open my eyes to the greater needs of our world, not just our country. And And I started to hear about the people groups that had no believers, no access to the gospel, people that had never met a Christian, who would never, you know, they had lived their whole lives and had never met a Christian. That just broke my heart. It broke my heart. And so I began to unpack that, and I really felt the call into missions, to be a full-time missionary. And the Lord settled that in my heart over a process of some time. And along with the call into missions, you start to realize the reality of what missions life was. And I, as a missionary kid, knew what that life looked like. I knew what the financial situation kind of looked like. I knew that missionaries typically don't make a whole lot of money. And as an evangel student, I obviously had, you know, student debt that does come with it. I don't know about you guys, but that's something that I've dealt with. There was a lot of things in my life that the Lord was wanting me to trust him for, small and big things. Things with relationships, where I was having difficulty with people around me, either, you know, classmates or people in my dorm room, or, you know, the financial needs that I mentioned. I didn't know how I was going to get to the mission field. I didn't know how he was going to provide financially. I would pray for his provision for little things. You know, as a college student, you've got tests, you've got things to study for, you've got speeches to make, you've got all these different things. And I would find myself praying, God, help me with this next thing, help me with this next thing. And I want to tell you, he was faithful to do that. But after he was, I did little reflection on the fact that he helped me. And as a result, I think that I definitely struggled to believe that he was going to provide for those next things in my life. The summer before my junior year of college, he showed me what it really meant to trust him. I was invited by my father, David, my father there, my mom, Kristen's here, and actually my sister and my brother-in-law, Michael, and niece and nephew, Micah and Mia, they're here tonight. But my dad, he invited me to come with him on a missions trip, and we were to do construction work on a church. And I was so excited. He described to me the kind of work we'd be doing, and it was all manual labor. It was moving concrete, and it was, you know, moving gravel and straightening rebar, you know, general construction. I was excited to do that. I was excited to do that with him and experience that. And so I remember the first day we got there, the people of that church we were working with invited me in, and the pastor had heard about me, and you know, my father had told them about me, and so he had deemed me his grandson, so he called me grandson and gave me a big hug when he saw me. And those people, we met them at the church that first day when we flew in, and then we went to the hotel. Well, we were geared up for a full week of work, and so we went right to bed as soon as we could, and we woke up that next morning and went and had breakfast, and we headed straight for that church again to go work. And before we got started to work, we had a devotional with the construction workers and then some church staff and the pastor. And the first thing we did was he asked us, can everyone, let's go in a circle and we'll share our favorite scripture. We'll share our favorite verse. And I actually have with me my journal from that trip. And I want to read for you just the first bit of August 12th, that first day that we went to work. I said, today, after breakfast, we went straight to the church. We had a devotion which consisted of everyone sharing their favorite Bible verse. I shared 2 Corinthians 12:9, my grace is sufficient for you. After I was able to pray for Gabriel, who had his 13th birthday that day, and then we began to work right after. So we shared that verse, and you know, that was something that little tidbit of verse 9 there was something that the Lord was kind of instilling in my heart. He was working on me in that time in my life, is just needing his grace. We all need his grace, and he was showing me grace. And so we went right to work, and man, we got so much work done that first day. We moved a huge pile of gravel in a matter of a few hours, and then we were moving buckets of water to mix concrete, and we were straightening rebar, and we just got so much done that first day, and I just felt so good about that. Well, we woke up for the second day of work, and I was excited to get some more work done. And so that day we were straightening more rebar. That was the work we needed to get done, and so we went right at it right in the morning after our devotional, and I was feeling really confident because we were working really hard, and you know, I had picked up rebar and sliced my hand open, and we found tape and I taped it up, and we just kept working. And we worked for about 4 hours, and then it was time for lunch, and that day was really, really hot. And so we were all dehydrated and hungry, and so we went to the pastor's house, and these people in the country that we were in, they're so hospitable. And so the pastor invited all the construction workers, all the staff, and we all ate together, and we were eating everything. There was soup, there was rice, there was all these meats and fruit. They just had everything. They brought in all the food, and we were eating, and I had my fill. I had one of everything, and I had you know, all the juice, and I finished it off with coffee and ice cream, and so I was absolutely stuffed. And we were having a good time telling stories and laughing and talking about the needs of the country, the needs of the church. And so soon after that, we went right back to work, and we got right back at it. And it was the sun was really, really beaten down at that point. Well, I was ready to work and got into, you know, straightening rebar again, and it wasn't maybe 20 minutes after we started to work, I started to feel extremely nauseous and lightheaded to the point where I couldn't work anymore. And I really didn't know what was going on. I was like, oh crud, something I ate, you know, for lunch is acting up and so with me. And so I laid down on a pew and tried to breathe and for a little bit, and I just began to get more and more nauseous. I was actually getting fearful at how dizzy and disoriented I felt, and I ended up just having to go to the bathroom, and I vomited there and just completely lost all of everything, all the water I had and everything, and I felt terrible. Well, I later let my dad know I need to go back to the hotel, and he sent me back with the driver, and about, you know, 10 hours after that, I had thrown up more times than I can count, and you'd think after drinking water and losing it and drinking water, I did that about, you know, a dozen times, where I really was desperate for water, and you'd think you'd stop drinking water, you'd get the point, but no, I was really scared and needed hydration. And so it got to the point where my dad came back, and I said, Dad, I have never been this sick in my life. I had looked in the mirror after just throwing up that many times, and you know what comes with you know, when you have stomach and intestine issues, it's not just throwing up, and I had both, and I was so dehydrated. Well, it was about 8 o'clock in the night, and I told my dad, I said, I really need to either see a doctor or go to the hospital and maybe get an IV, because I can't drink anything. I really just can't retain any water. I said, this is serious. I don't think this is food poisoning. At that point, I had had food poisoning several times in my life, and it was more than that. So he said, it could just be a bug. We'll see. He said, I'm going to take the team down for dinner. We're going to get some food, and I'll come back and check on you. So he came back up, and I had passed out in my bed, and thankfully he had taken the key, and so in that country, in that hotel, the key is the doorknob. So he took the key with him, and there was no way for me to get out. So even if I did need help, I was stuck in the hotel room. So he came back, and I woke up, and he said, okay, I called the pastor's son, and he's going to find a doctor for you. And I thought that was going to be a quick process. I thought it was going to be, you know, 20, 30 minutes they were going to come. Well, I honestly had completely blacked out again, just because of dehydration, exhaustion, and I remember just trying to drink water again, and I vomited again, and I was having so much pain, and my vision was starting to go. It was becoming a dangerous situation. I had no idea what was wrong with me. I had never been this sick in my whole life. And he woke me up and said, the doctor's here, they're downstairs, they're going to come up. They had called him. And so I was so excited. In my mind, I thought, okay, the doctor's here, and what do we think? When a doctor's coming to visit you, they bring stuff, right? That's what we expect. And so I was excited for that. I thought he was going to bring an IV, all the medicine I needed. Well, they walk in, and the pastor's son walks in, and I'm peering around the corner waiting for that doctor to come around the corner, and I look, and it's a guy that's like 3 years older than me. And he's wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and he's got a cell phone. That is it. And at that moment, I was thinking, okay, this is it for me. I'm not going to make it. And so So he quickly came over to me and he had a look at my tongue. I guess that's a good way to tell that you're dehydrated. And he told us how serious it was, that I was extremely dehydrated. It was a serious situation and that we needed to get to a hospital and have blood work done to find out what was wrong with me. When he said that I was supposed to go to a hospital, there was hesitation in his voice and I didn't understand. I didn't know why. And there was a pause. And he took my dad and took the pastor's son out of the hotel room, and they were having a discussion. And I was wondering, like, what's the holdup? Why in the world are we not headed to the hospital already? What's wrong? 5 minutes passed, and they came back in, and I was just laying in my bed, just honestly pretty out of it. And I just remember my dad and the doctor sitting on the bed, and my dad told me, you need to go to the hospital. But the doctor says, as an American in this country, you're required to stay in the hospital until you're well, if you're sick. And they stick you in a ward. And the doctor says that he doesn't think you're going to make it if you stay in that ward. And if they're to keep you, that is not a safe situation. The hospitals are very ill-equipped for sick people. And they just don't have the staff, and they're not going to take good care of you. And so the doctor said that he has a plan. And so I was like, okay, what's that plan? And he said, we're going to need you to dress like a national of the country. And the doctor's going to bring you in as his brother. And he's going to sneak you in the hospital, and he's going to get you your medicine, and he's going to try to get you out. And so they were saying these things calm, trying to make me calm. Well, if you hear any of that, that does not make you calm, okay? You think getting sneaked into a hospital to get your medicine, that's not something you want to hear, especially when you're that sick. I could hardly walk or think. So I began to put on the clothes that they were telling me to put on, and thankfully I was tan that summer, so it was going to be, you know, it was working out. I did look the part, and I put on the clothes, and we were getting ready, and we were in the taxi, or in the car that they had brought on the way there, and truthfully, I was really, really fearful. I was fearful for my life, fearful that I was going to a hospital that I was told was ill-equipped to take care of me. And I didn't trust that this doctor knew what he was doing at all. You know, this guy was barely older than me, right? And so I just asked my dad, I told him, I'm really scared. And he said, the Lord has you here, and you can trust him. You don't have anything to worry about. And I can tell you, truthfully, I was really scared. But the Lord gave me peace, and I knew it was not a peace that I had felt before. It was a peace that was from him. It was his peace, and he gave me that. And it was a stillness. And so I laid aside all my worry and all my expectations, and I had prayed, just help me. Help me. And so we got to the hospital, and my dad had to wait in a nearby park. He couldn't come in with me, or else it'd be really obvious that we were American. And so he had to wait in that park, and the doctor took me in, and he told me to wait in the waiting room, and the security was eyeing me up and down, and I just didn't look at them. I stared right at the wall in front of me, and I was thinking, nothing to see here. Like, this is all normal. Don't look at me. And so they, you know, it wasn't maybe 10 minutes, and the doctor opened the door, and he was fully suited up. He had everything, his uniform, his coat, his ID, and everything, and he told me to come in, and so I followed him in, and we walked in, and there was a lady that was on a stretcher right away, and she had passed away, and they didn't cover her at all, and I was just so shocked at that. You know, here we typically don't bring, you know, people that have passed away and leave them out in the hall, and that was shocking, and I was barely coherent, and I was this all this input, and these people with broken arms and just piled in lines. And the hospital was so old and dirty, and I was truthfully so fearful. But I had that stillness in me, and so he invited me into the room where they did diagnosis. And there was a doctor in there, his friend. It was another doctor friend, and he brought me in, and I was supposed to be this guy's brother, and I was supposed to speak the language in a way that sounded like a national. And I didn't know that was the first time I was, you know, it was the first time I was in this country. I didn't know if I could do that. And I just prayed for help. You know, it's a really difficult thing to pray for help with a thing that seems dishonest, but it was really life and death. And I prayed for his help with the language, and I can tell you that he gave me a peace and he gave me an ability to understand these people that were speaking far faster than anything I was used to, and to help me to speak the language and to understand and to communicate what my symptoms were. And so I said, okay, here's what you need. And he gave me my prescriptions, and I signed off a name that wasn't mine. I signed off the name that they had given me, and that was that. I knew, at this point, I'm going to get my medicine, right? So he invited me into the injection room next, the doctor that had brought me in, and we walked in, and it looked like an absolute train wreck. The blood work lab was so dirty. And they sat me in this old desk. It was a school desk, the ones that have the table part that opens and closes like that. And so I sat down, and I just remember them hooking me up to take my blood sample. And they thankfully, thank the Lord, they opened a new needle. And I was worried about that. And they put that in my arm, and something happened where it like disconnected, and my blood just started to come out and go everywhere. And I was, at this point, super dehydrated and had lost all the fluid in my body, and so I couldn't even look at that. I just had to wait until they fixed it, and finally they fixed that. And they opened this old box of vials that were just caked, and they had been used, and they were not clean at all. And I was just praying, like, Lord, help me not to get even sicker by whatever they're about to do. And they finished that, and they took my blood. It was like 3 vials or something like that. And the doctor brought me into the injection room. The next room was the injection room, and he grabbed 3 enormous needles, and he told me, this one's for your something to do with, to stop the vomiting, something to do with to stop the diarrhea, and then something with dehydration, or maybe it was like an antibacterial, just in case. We didn't know what was wrong with me yet. They hadn't tested my blood. And so he put the first enormous needle in my backside, and I immediately passed out, and I blacked out. And I just remember going limp, and I didn't know what was happening. And I woke up, and he was mashing his knuckles into my mouth. And that's apparently what you do. You cause pain to bring back someone who is blacked out. And he had cotton swabs under my nose soaked in alcohol. And he was trying to get me to stay awake. And he was saying, it's okay. It's going to be okay. And I was really at that point just along for the ride. I was along for the ride. And so he stuck me with the second one, and I blacked out again. And he brought me right back, to be awake, and he said, it's going to be okay. And finally, he sits me in a chair, thankfully, because I was standing up for this. He sits me in a chair, and he said, we just have one more. And so, thankfully, he stuck me with that one, and I stayed awake, and I was just holding that cotton swab, with alcohol to stay awake. And there was a girl right beside me having an asthma attack, and they didn't have the medicine she needed, is what I heard. And she was frantically just crying and screaming, and I was so nervous. So he brought me into the original room, the last room he was going to bring me into, and he told me that I was going to get an IV finally, and I was so thankful for that, because I was thinking, that's just what I need. I need hydration again, so I don't become so dehydrated that, I don't make it. That was my fear. And so he sits me in a wheelchair and tells me, I'll be right back. Well, he was gone for like 30 minutes, and at that time, the doctor that had taken his spot, his girlfriend was visiting, during our time there. And they were asking me questions about life, and he was really just being vulgar with his girlfriend in front of me, and I honestly just had no energy for that. So I just stopped answering his questions, I shut my eyes, and I fell asleep. And he came back in, finally, that doctor who had invited me in, and he had the IV, and while I was in there, they had hooked me up with a different system. And what had actually happened with that one, I don't know if you guys have seen an IV, but the cap actually came off, and my blood actually began to spill out a second time. The cap fell on the hospital ground. The guy picked it right back up and put it right back on my IV, right into my bloodstream. And so again, I just prayed, Jesus, help this not to make me sick. I'm even more sick than I am. And so I got that IV, and they hooked me up to it, and I just felt cold all over my body, and I was just praising Jesus that I had the IV finally. It had been like 13 hours since I had had a drink of water, and that had actually stayed in me, and I had no hydration. till that time. And so I passed out again, and I woke up. It had been like an hour and a half, and I had drained the entire IV. And he said, okay, we're not done yet. We need to get you out of here. And he needed to leave the IV in my arm during that time. And so he went and got this big black shirt, and he covered me with it and covered all the equipment that he needed to keep me hooked onto. And he said, okay, we need to sneak you back out. And so we went out of the room, and people were looking at us because this doctor was escorting me, and we went past security, and they were looking at us. And again, I just like tried not to make eye contact, and we went out the exit, and we were out of the hospital. And I didn't know what to say to this guy. He had brought me through several different, you know, departments or whatever in the hospital, and had got me at everything I needed. I didn't know what to say to him, but he had saved my life. He really did. And we met up with my dad, and my dad, you know, didn't know, I don't think he knew that I had, you know, passed out. He didn't know the reality, what that hospital looked like. But while I was in there, the power was going on and off. And I later found out that when that happened, people were actually in surgery, and the doctors would get out their cell phone and shine their flashlight, you know, over a chest cavity when they were doing surgery. And that I learned the reality of that hospital. There was no way I would have survived in whatever quarantined, you know, sector that they put me in. Well, I later found out that I had had E. coli, and it had filled my bloodstream, and it had reached my kidneys, and it was beginning to infect my kidneys. It was a really dangerous situation. I found out that doctor had had, at that time, I think, 4 specialty degrees or something like that. He was an absolute prodigy in medicine. He had been brought to meet the leader of the country personally because of his specialty. The Lord provided the only man that could have helped me in that situation. He provided the only doctor that could help me. And he was definitely the best doctor in that province. And that was the Lord's provision. Well, it wasn't over. I had, you know, a few more days where I couldn't even walk. I was very, very weak. And that gave me a lot of time to think. It gave me a lot of time to think about what had happened, where I was completely helpless, and I could do nothing to make my situation better at all. On my own, you know, I would have tried to reason with that, with the situation I was in, and if he hadn't given me that peace, I don't know. I don't know what would have happened. If he didn't provide that doctor, I wouldn't have made it. I wouldn't have made it. His power and provision was absolutely evident in my circumstance. And in my utter weakness, the Lord showed me his strength. I want to read for you the rest of 2 Corinthians 12:9, and I want to include verse 10. So this was the verse that I shared the day before I got sick. It's Paul talking about his prayer to Jesus, and in Jesus' reply, he says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest upon me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong.'" And that was my absolute reality. I could do nothing to make my situation worse. I know that there are many stories around this room where you guys have experienced the Lord providing for you in miraculous ways, of saving loved ones, providing financially. There are so many different needs that the Lord has met for you. And I know that so often it's easy for us to deal with the little situations in our life, the little worries on our own, with our own understanding, our own reasoning, our own ability to fix them. But when the need comes, when great needs come, what are we to do? If we haven't placed trust in the little things with the Lord, what are we to do with the large things? So often we put our trust in our own understanding, wealth, possessions, other people, instead of trusting the one who has defeated death and grave for all eternity. Instead of trusting in the one with boundless storehouse for our needs, one who has all understanding and knows everything about us. He knows us better than we know ourselves. We have everlasting life in our King Jesus, and nothing can separate us from the love of the Father. We have no reason not to trust him. And I want to tell you, church, the Lord is trustworthy. He is absolutely trustworthy for every single one of our needs, little or small. He cares about every single one of them. And he wants to build our faith. He wants us to put our trust in him for those little things. He sees our frame. He understands when our faith is little. He understands when we have doubts of whether he will provide or not. I believe that he understands that. He understands the position that we're in tonight, each and every one of us. And the way that life goes, he gives us many, many opportunities to trust him. Many opportunities to trust him. This is not the only time that I've seen the hand of God in my life. I've definitely heard many stories of God providing for those around me, for people I've grown up with, my friends, people I've met in the church. I know that you guys have those amazing stories as well. I constantly draw from this story. Story of when God saved my life. I look back on it and I reflect on how I wish when I were a little bit younger that I had reflected upon the times when God provided for the little things. Because I believe that when we look back and we see his faithfulness for the little things, we have absolute faith that he will provide in our time of need when the need is great. In my time when I could absolutely do nothing to make my situation better, all I needed to do was pray, help me. And he was there in my situation of helplessness. It's important that we not only look back to see his faithfulness, but also that we lay down our fears and our worries before our Almighty God, who is forever trustworthy, who never wastes a negative circumstance or experience. He uses these to strengthen us in him. And perhaps what this does is lead us to take the very things we will fearfully grip and realize that in our weakness, we can hand our need over to our Father who is always strong. I believe that when we take that position of weakness, we posit ourselves before him at his feet in weakness. We get strength from him. We draw our strength from Christ. Tonight, I challenge you to take the needs in your life, whether they be small or great, and to lay them before the Lord. Lay them before the Lord in sacrifice, a sacrifice of faith, laying before him the things that worry you and are giving you fear and anxiety and stress. He cares about every need in your life. He is an absolutely trustworthy Father, and he loves us dearly. And I believe he not only wants to meet every single one of your needs, but he also wants to grow you, and he wants to develop your faith. I think that's a two-part thing there. He wants to meet your need, and sometimes he doesn't meet our need how we want him to, but he also wants to build our faith in the process of when we lay that before him. Sometimes it takes time. Sometimes the answer isn't what we want. But he wants to build our faith and our trust in him. In our weakness, he is strong. Thank you.